Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Murder at the Motel by Beth Dolgner. Narrated by Patria Burchard. Chapter 1. I yawned and blinked at Madge. Sorry, what? Before she could answer, I felt something wet against the back of my hand. Without even bothering to look down, I turned my wrist so I could pet Felipe. Hey, buddy, I mumbled. When my fingers felt fur instead of leathery chupacabra skin, I glanced down. It hadn't been Felipe's wet little nose I had felt, but a snout. Zack was sitting on his hind legs, looking up at me with wide black eyes. His rust-red fur shone in the light of the overhead chandelier. He huffed out what I thought was supposed to be a greeting. I retracted my hand. Zack, I am not going to pet you. That's weird. Zack cocked his head. I knew he understood every word I was saying. Even in his werewolf form, Zack still retained his full human consciousness. I bent at the waist so we were nose to nose. You, I said, are a human being most of the time, and I am not going to pet you. I paused, then added, especially not in your human form, so don't get any ideas. Zack huffed again, his tongue lolling out. I wasn't sure if he was amused by my joke or trying to look adorable. Well, as adorable as a werewolf could possibly look, anyway. In answer, I crossed my arms and gazed at Zack with one eyebrow raised. I had never heard a werewolf sigh, but that was exactly what Zack did before he rose onto all fours and padded away. We were in the entryway of Nightmare Sanctuary Haunted House, and Zack headed in the direction of the dining room, where he probably hoped to find a staff member who was more open to the idea of giving a werewolf a belly rub. I stifled another yawn as I lazily watched Zack's retreating form, but when Madge spoke again, I returned my attention to her. I asked if you enjoyed your evening. Madge tossed her long blonde curls over her shoulder and peered at me. You look exhausted. Because I am. A guest at the motel was shouting up a storm in the middle of the night. Then another guest began to shout, probably trying to quiet the first man, but it only added to the racket. Madge smiled, which made her look even more beautiful. I wanted to ask her if she was born that gorgeous, or if she had used some witchcraft on herself to look that way.
Go home, Olivia, and get some sleep. Tomorrow is Saturday, so we'll be busy here. You need your rest.
I waved languidly. I will be happy to take your advice. Good night, Madge. I turned and made it all the way to the double front doors of the old building before I heard firm footsteps coming from the direction of Damien's office. My hand shot out, and I yanked on the door handle, but I was too late to make an escape. Damien called my name, and I turned to him reluctantly.
Can you please come to my office? Damien said quietly.
He was wearing his mirrored sunglasses, which was never a good sign. It meant his emotions were flaring up, and he was trying to hide the telltale sign of his green eyes glowing. I opened my mouth to protest. I wanted nothing more than to fall into bed and, hopefully, have a peaceful night in my apartment at Cowboys Corral Motor Lodge. Damien, though, looked tense, and I knew whatever he wanted to discuss shouldn't wait. I nodded curtly and followed him down a hallway to his office. At first, I didn't realize someone was sitting in one of the two oxblood leather chairs in front of Damien's desk. Vivian was so petite, her head didn't rise above the back of the chair, and I only saw her as I moved to sit down, too. Oh, I said, suddenly understanding what this was about. Vivian was a psychic medium. I had met her on my first night of work at the sanctuary, but I usually only saw her in passing. She and her husband, Amos, tended to keep to themselves. During a recent Friday the 13th party, Vivian had explained to me that her psychic senses could overwhelm her sometimes, so she often had to isolate herself from others to quiet the noise.
Hi, Olivia. I already told Damien, but he thought you needed to know too.
The hesitance in Vivian's voice put me on my guard. Know what? I asked. I had been in the process of dropping into the other chair, but I remained standing. Vivian and Damien exchanged a quick glance.
Vivian didn't pick up on much at the mine, Damien said.
Earlier in the day, Vivian had visited the old mine owned by his father, Baxter. The mine had been converted into a home,
though it clearly hadn't been lived in for decades. We were hoping we might find clues there that could help us learn more about Baxter's disappearance about 8 months before.
So there weren't any psychic imprints left on the place? I asked Vivian.
I sensed a deep feeling of pain, Vivian said. But also...
She fell silent and looked at Damien again.
I felt my chest tighten. I didn't know what was coming, but clearly it wasn't good.
Vivian tugged nervously at the hem of her vintage shirt. With cropped jeans, a white button-down blouse, and her long, dark hair pulled up in a red bandana, she looked like a pin-up queen from the 1950s.
Your name was in my head, Olivia. I don't mean I heard a voice speaking to me. It was more like someone directed my thoughts to you.
Why? I wasn't sure if I was upset by that news or simply curious. It certainly seemed to make Vivian uncomfortable. Vivian shook her head.
I don't know.
It means I was right. There's a link between you and my father.
Damien had been standing, and he finally settled into a chair behind the massive oak desk.
Whether it's a psychic link or something magical, I don't know.
Again, why? I pressed. You've been saying that for a long time now, but we still don't know why I would have a connection to a man I've never met. Damien took off his sunglasses and slid them into the inner pocket of his tailored gray suit jacket.
I don't know, but I think we were right when we speculated that Sunny's Folly Mine is going to help us find my father.
I turned to Vivian. What about the pain you sensed? Is it coming from Baxter? And if so, is he feeling pain now, wherever he is? Or is it old pain?
Vivian thought for a few moments before she said,
It's old pain, but I don't know who it's coming from. It could even be coming from more than one person. There was some terrible sorrow in that mine, and it left a strong impression. I didn't pick up on any details, though.
Thank you for doing this for us, I said. It had been Damien's idea to send Vivian to the mine to see what psychic impressions she might pick up on. The mine was warded against ghosts, so we had known she wouldn't encounter any of those to communicate with, but we had hoped she might get other information. And she had. It just hadn't been the kind of information we were anticipating. Damien echoed my thanks, and Vivian told us she was happy to help before leaving. When it was just Damien and me in the office, I looked at him and asked again, Why me?
Maybe because you're a conjurer, and your magic will be the key to finding my father.
At first, I had argued with Damien a lot when he suggested I was a conjurer. I was certain I wasn't supernatural at all. But as time had gone on, I had realized Damien's insistence about me being able to desire something so much that I could magically make it happen wasn't just him being stubborn. He wanted it to be true because it gave him hope that we would find Baxter. So, over the last couple of weeks, I had stopped arguing with Damien about it. Instead, I was willingly letting him give me lessons in controlling my thoughts and emotions to hone my alleged skills. It sometimes took an enormous amount of patience on my part, but it wasn't doing any harm, and it made Damien feel better. There wasn't much else to say after Vivian had left. We could speculate all night long about what she had sensed in the mine, but it wouldn't get us any closer to knowing the truth. So I wished Damien a good night and walked to my car as fast as I could. I didn't want anyone else asking for a moment of my time. When I pulled into the parking lot of Cowboys Corral Motor Lodge, I was surprised to find nearly every spot was taken. I had never seen the motel so full before. The parking lot sat between the two cinder block wings of the motel, which ran perpendicular to the road. At the front of the property, a two-story office building sat right in the middle of the driveways into and out of the parking lot. My efficiency apartment was at the rear of the wing on the right, but I had to drive past it and loop around as I hunted for a parking spot. I eventually ended up near the office. As I cut through the parking lot on the way to my apartment, I heard a loud voice and looked over to see a man on a cell phone. He was pacing back and forth in front of a ground floor room almost directly beneath my own. I recognized the voice as the one I had heard shouting the night before. This time, the man was yelling into the phone about needing to cancel a contract.
I'm not going to be back, so why would I want to keep paying for it? He yelled.
With his free hand, the man reached up and tugged at his thinning brown hair.
A moment later, he added, "That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard."
"You're the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard," I thought. Being tired made me snarky. A voice boomed from somewhere nearby.
"Keep it down, or I'll call the police."
It must have been the same guest who had been yelling at the loud man the night before. I groaned and trudged up my stairs. Even once I had closed the door of my apartment, I could still hear shouting. I quickly put on my pajamas, washed my face, and fell into bed. I lay on my side and clamped a pillow over my ear. It turned the shouting into a low drone, and I fell asleep within minutes. When I woke up on Saturday morning, I stretched and rubbed my eyes. It was bright in my apartment. Too bright. My front door was standing wide open, the sun shining onto my orange shag rug. In the open doorway, I could see the backlit silhouette of a man. Chapter 2. I leaped out of bed, and I could hear the way my voice shook with both fear and adrenaline as I shouted, "Who are you?" The man took a few steps forward, and I instinctively grabbed my comforter, holding a corner of it in front of me like a shield, as if that would keep me safe from an intruder. Once he was inside, and no longer in the glare of the sun, though, I could see the man was wearing jeans and a work shirt that bulged over a beer belly. He had a toolbox in one hand.
"Oh, sorry, ma'am,"
he said in a deep voice.
"I had understood the room would be unoccupied at this hour."
"Who are you?" I asked again, though slightly less wildly this time around.
"Sammy Sims, from Sims Plumbing."
I lowered the edge of the comforter slightly.
"You're a plumber?"
"Yes, I came to fix your broken shower."
I shook my head.
"My shower is fine. I think you got the wrong room."
Sammy glanced back toward my open front door, where A2 was painted in a faded gold.
"Oh, I'm supposed to be downstairs. My apologies for the inconvenience."
"No problem," I said, though internally I was still feeling on edge. I could understand that Sammy might have gotten the wrong room, but how he had been able to unlock my door was a mystery. As Sammy walked out, closing the door as he went, I consoled myself with the idea that Mama must have given him a skeleton key that could unlock any of the motel doors. At the same time, though, I chided myself for not having used the security chain. If I'd put it in place the night before, Sammy would have only been able to open the door about 3 inches, and I wouldn't have woken up to a complete stranger in my apartment. It seemed pointless to turn on my coffee maker. After the jolt of adrenaline my unexpected visitor had sent coursing through me, I was already wide awake and humming with energy. Still, out of habit, I hit the button and got the coffee started while I took a quick shower. Of course, I didn't do any of that before engaging the security chain on my door, in case someone else tried to wander in. I had just put conditioner on my shoulder-length auburn hair when the shower sputtered and stopped flowing. I twisted the handles, jiggled the lever that switched the water flow between the bath and the shower, and muttered a few swear words for good measure. But none of it made a difference. Great. Now I do need a plumber. I wrapped a towel around myself and tried the bathroom sink with no luck. I tried the kitchen sink next, but it was clear my apartment suddenly had no water. There was, however, a pitcher of water in my fridge. I reluctantly pulled it out, held my head over the kitchen sink, and began to pour. I screeched as the icy water tumbled over my head, but by the time the pitcher was empty, I had at least rinsed most of the conditioner out of my hair. I towel-dried my hair briskly, trying to warm myself up, then got dressed in jeans and a long-sleeved blue blouse. It was shorts weather outside, but I was too chilled for that option just yet. Once I had dry hair, I headed to the front office to talk to Mama about the plumber's unexpected visit. The office's thick brown carpet and formica countertop were as retro-kitsch as my own apartment's decor. Mama's voluminous, wavy gray hair stuck up from behind the counter, and it was moving rhythmically. I could hear an oldies tune playing quietly, and as I got closer, I could see Mama sitting at the computer behind the countertop, her lips moving with the lyrics. She looked up and smiled, her bright blue eyes shining.
"Hi there, Olivia. How are you this morning?"
"Actually, I've come to report that I have no water. I'm sure it has to do with the plumber who showed up in my apartment this morning."
Mama's eyes narrowed.
The water should be back on in no time, but tell me more about Sammy.
I briefly explained how I had woken up to find Sammy standing in my doorway, and as I talked, Mama's expression turned dark. When I had finished, she said,
I don't like that. I gave him a key to room 12, and that's the only door that key will open. I don't understand how he was able to unlock your door.
It's a mystery, if you didn't give him a skeleton key.
I'll ask him about it,
Mama assured me.
Sammy has been our plumber here for a few years now, so maybe I did give him a skeleton key at some point and forgot.
I promised Mama I would get some marketing work done for the motel later that afternoon. After all, I did the work in exchange for free rent on my apartment, and I didn't want her to think I wasn't pulling my weight. First, though, I was going hiking. I wasn't really the outdoors type, but when my friends and co-workers Justine and Clara had asked me to join them, I decided it would be a good chance to get to know both of them better. Besides, they had promised me it wouldn't be a strenuous hike. The walk back to my apartment after my chat with Mama finally drove the chill out of my bones. The sunshine was still warm, even though it was the 1st of October. I changed into a pair of khaki shorts and a white tank top, then made the drive to a recreation area south of Nightmare. Justine had instructed me to meet her and Clara at the parking lot, where a trail with the ominous name of Turn Back Trail began. I parked and walked up to find Clara, staring at a map posted on a wooden signboard. She had crammed a black cowboy hat down over her ears to hide their pointed tips, and her dark sunglasses ensured no one would spot her violet-colored eyes. Both features were a dead giveaway that she was a fairy. Hi, Clara, I called. Clara turned in my direction and gave me a big smile. She was dressed in green leggings and a ratty black Nightmare Sanctuary Haunted House t-shirt.
Happy Halloween season, Olivia, she called in her childlike voice.
I laughed. I thought Halloween was just one day, not a whole season.
You haven't experienced October in Nightmare yet. It's the start of the town's tourist season now that the heat is dying down, and half the businesses here suddenly start bragging about every unexplained creak or alleged ghost sighting. The saloon even does seances.
Wow, I had no idea. At least Clara's news helped explain why it had been so tough to find a parking spot the night before at the motel. I made a mental note to ask Mama if I could get my very own reserved parking place at the bottom of my stairs.
Oh, yeah,
I heard Justine say behind me. I glanced over my shoulder to see her walking up while carrying a bulging backpack, which she patted.
I forgot to get our lunch out of the trunk.
If Nightmare is a haven for Halloween fans, then I'm guessing we'll be busier than ever at the sanctuary, I speculated. Justine slid her arms into the backpack, then began to wind her long chestnut waves into a knot on the top of her head.
Oh, just wait, she promised. You'll be overwhelmed by all the guests who come to the haunt.
As the three of us began to walk along the trail, which led through a cluster of scrubby trees, Clara said,
Speaking of guests, did you know we had one show up at 8 o'clock this morning? I'm amazed anyone was even awake to answer his knocks at the front door.
I must have slept through it.
But why would anyone show up at a haunted house at that hour?
Justine sounded offended by the very idea of it.
Madge told me he was there demanding to see what he called the psychic.
Clara shrugged.
I guess he needed to know his fortune and couldn't wait until a decent time.
I wondered if Vivian had been roused from sleep and whether she needed a cup of coffee before feeling awake enough to use her psychic abilities. I didn't realize she gave psychic readings, I said. I know she's very perceptive and that she can communicate with ghosts, but I thought she only worked at the sanctuary. Justine had been slightly ahead of me, and she slowed until we were walking next to each other. She gave me a curious look.
Viv makes extra cash doing readings from time to time. She doesn't advertise her services because she doesn't want to step on the toes of Nightmare's resident psychic, but she gets a few clients through word of mouth.
Justine was still giving me that same look, and I prompted, Just say whatever it is that's on your mind.
Well, speaking of Vivian, is it true she visited that mine Theo stayed in a while back? And is it true that Baxter owns it?
Clara asked eagerly. Yes and yes, I confirmed. And before you ask, Yes, it really was converted into a house, with bedrooms and everything. Judging by the awful color schemes, I'd say it was done in the late 60s or early 70s. Clara made a little gagging noise.
Our parents' generation had terrible taste.
You'll never get to see it for yourself, I said. It's warded with iron. Clara stopped walking abruptly, and Justine and I turned to look at her.
It's warded against fairies? She asked.
And ghosts. Plus, there are tiny silver spikes in the walls to ward against werewolves.
That doesn't sound like something Baxter would do.
Clara's tone was low, almost pouty. Damien and I said the same thing, I agreed.
I wonder what Baxter was hiding from,
Justine said slowly, picking at a button on her plaid shirt.
Or what he was hiding from the supernatural community.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that second option. I stared at the ground, picturing the mine in my head. Damien and I had thought Baxter was trying to keep himself safe in there, and it never occurred to me that maybe Baxter was trying to keep the supernatural community safe from something, some living thing, probably, that was inside the mine. Despite the warm day, I felt a shiver work its way up my spine. We started walking again, and we continued to speculate about the mine all the way to the trail's end. The ground had been rising gradually as we walked, and we were rewarded with a spectacular view of the rolling hills for miles around. Mountains in the east stood out darkly against the blue sky. By the time we were settled onto large rocks to enjoy the sandwiches and chips Justine had packed, we had moved on to other subjects. I spent a fair amount of time complaining about Zack expecting me to pet him when he was in his werewolf form. It's just weird, you know. I'm not going to scratch his ears when he's human, so why would I do it when he's a werewolf? Clara snickered.
At least he's housebroken.
By the time I got back to the motel that afternoon, I was tired, but in a good way. The night before, I had felt weary from a lack of sleep and a busy night at work. After the hike, I was tired in a way that made me feel like I had accomplished something. I took a shower, grateful to have running water again, then headed to the front office with my laptop. I was updating the motel's social media pages, and I needed some input from Mama. As soon as I walked through the glass door of the office, I regretted it. The loud man who had been shouting into the phone the night before was standing at the counter, his fingers curled around its edges.
"I'm telling you, he's a thief!"
The man was yelling at Mama, who was standing with her hands on her hips and a defiant look on her face.
"That plumber stole my valuables!"
Chapter 3
"Mr. Evers, perhaps you misplaced your... What did you say is missing?"
Mama's voice was overly sweet, like she was hoping to charm the man into calming down.
"Antique jewelry," the man said tightly. "Diamonds, rubies. The collection of generations of the Evers family."
"Where is the last place you saw them?"
"Hidden in my suitcase."
I couldn't see the man's face, but I could tell he was talking through clenched teeth.
"Would you like someone to help you make a search of your room?" Mama asked.
"No, because they're not in my room. That plumber stole them when he was working on my shower."
Mama straightened her shoulders, looking even more defiant.
"I've been working with Sammy for the past 3 years, and not one single guest has ever reported things going missing after he'd done work in their room. I think it's unlikely he has suddenly started a criminal career."
Mr. Evers pounded his fists on the countertop so hard I jumped from surprise. He started yelling again.
"I don't care what other guests have said. I'm saying that he stole from me."
Mama raised her hands and took half a step back.
"If you really believe that, then this is a matter for the police. I suggest you call them and file a report."
"That's why I came up here. You need to call the police right now."
Mama shook her head adamantly.
"No, you need to. I will write down their number for you, or you can file your report in person. The police station isn't far from here. Would you like directions?"
Mr. Evers made a noise of disgust, then sneered.
"I can find it myself. Thanks for nothing."
He whirled around, and I jumped out of his path so I wouldn't get plowed over. His round face was twisted in rage, and as he passed by me, I heard him muttering a lot of unkind words that I'm pretty sure were directed at Mama. Once the door had closed and we were alone, I asked Mama, "You okay?" Mama gave herself a little shake.
"Yeah, horrible man.
I can't imagine anyone is getting sleep as long as he's staying here. He was shouting again in the middle of the night."
"Other guests have said the same thing. I am one more guest complaint away from kicking Leonard Evers out of my motor lodge."
Mama took a deep breath and let it out with a sigh. "What's he doing in Nightmare anyway?" I asked.
"I'm not sure. He made it sound like he's relocating from Ohio to Arizona, so I assume he's looking for a place to live."
I laughed weakly, letting out the tension I realized I was holding on to after witnessing the exchange between Leonard and Mama. "In that case, I sure hope he finds his dream house soon." While I worked from one of the lobby chairs that afternoon, I kept one eye on the screen of my laptop and the other on the front door. If Leonard decided to come back and start shouting some more, I wanted to be ready for it. I also half expected the police to show up to ask about Leonard's claim he'd been robbed by Sammy. Instead, the only people who came through the door were a handful of tourists who were checking in for the night. I was having a hard time shaking off the uncomfortable feeling Leonard had given me during his confrontation with Mama. I didn't like hearing anyone being so aggressive, and it made it worse that it was directed toward one of the sweetest women I had ever met. I decided to walk to work that night in the hope that moving my body would get my brain moving on to a new subject. After walking down a road that ran west for nearly a mile, I turned right at the old gallows and followed the narrow dirt lane that led to the sanctuary. The days were getting shorter, and it was nearly dark by the time I crested a gentle hill and caught sight of the former hospital building. The weather-stained gray stonework looked spooky, but a few bright lights were burning in upstairs windows. I knew my co-workers were in their apartments, getting ready for that night's work. Despite the imposing building, the warm lights managed to give the place a welcoming feel. Whatever the sanctuary might look like on the outside, my friends were inside. As soon as I walked through the double front doors and into the spacious entryway, I ran into Damien, who was coming from a doorway on the left-hand side that led into the haunt itself.
"What happened?" he asked immediately.
I pressed a hand against my face. "Is it really showing that much?" Damien just nodded, and I briefly told him about the worst motel guest in the history of Cowboys Corral. I didn't know how I had expected Damien to react, but his laughter caught me totally off guard. "How can you laugh?" I asked incredulously. "He was so rude to Mama." Damien sobered quickly.
"Oh, I'm angry about that, believe me. I laughed because this provides the perfect exercise for you. I can tell how much this Leonard guy bothers you, so your strong desire to have him out of the motel is a great chance for you to practice conjuring. You really should set your heart on him finding that dream house as soon as possible."
"I do wish for him to leave," I agreed. "I truly wish he finds a new home soon, a great waterfront property."
"But that's nowhere around here."
"Exactly." Damien laughed again, and I felt pride well up in me that I had managed to make him do that. Damien tended to be the stoic type, and that was on a good day, when he wasn't acting like he had a chip on his shoulder the size of a mountain. I took Damien's advice to heart. As I sat in the massive dining room and listened to Justine make announcements during the family meeting that happened each night before the haunt opened, I focused on how much I wished Leonard Evers would find his new home the very next day and leave Cowboys Corral behind forever. I was concentrating so hard, I nearly missed hearing Justine announce I would be in my usual spot at the front entrance, greeting guests and tearing tickets. By the time the sanctuary opened at 8 o'clock, there was a line of people snaking back and forth inside the entryway. I could barely see the brass stanchions and red velvet ropes because there were so many people packed inside the dim room. Even the spooky, atmospheric orchestral music that played from hidden speakers could barely be heard over the din of excited guests. Every now and then, someone would emit a shriek, even though there was nothing remotely scary about the entryway. I was so absorbed in tearing tickets, greeting people, and answering the usual questions, "Where's the bathroom?" and "Just how scary is it?" were the top two, that I entirely forgot about Leonard Evers. Until he suddenly appeared
right in front of me.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?